Monster Man, episode 443, Oozes, Slimes, and Jellies.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
In today's episode, we're taking a look at a couple more monsters from Monsters Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. As always, I want to remind you that my old-school essentials scenario zine, The Meganium Mine Murders, although it's pretty easy to adapt to your system of choice, but The Meganium Mine Murders is now available, and I'll put a list of places that you can get it down in the show notes below this. Okay, with that out of the way, let's take a look at some of these monsters. Now, this is an omnibus entry, and it includes only monsters that we have so far already seen. Okay, there are no new ones. It is a 5-page long entry that covers 10 monsters, all kinds of slimes and oozes that are familiar to us. So we've got the olive slime and the corresponding olive slime creature, as well as the mustard jelly, the crystal ooze, and the stun jelly from the Fiend Folio, the ochre jelly, gray ooze, gelatinous cube, green slime, and slithering tracker from Monster Manual. Are there really none of these from Monster Manual 2? I may have got that wrong. Maybe the mustard jelly is from Monster Manual 2. I actually can't read my own notes. Anyway, I like this omnibus entry because I think that this is one of those instances where multiple ways of thinking about these creatures categorically all fit the omnibus entry. So, for instance, when we were looking at ogres, it's a little weird that, like, Ogrelons are in the ogre entry and Orogs are in the orc entry, since both Ogrelons and Orogs are half-orc, half-ogre. Orogs, I mean, it makes sense that they're in the orc entry because, like, they hang out with orcs and they're going to be found with orcs. But Orogs are more a monster where if you're putting some orcs in your game and you want a few of them to be tougher than normal, you'd have Orogs. I guess what I mean by that is that those are monsters that are grouped kind of in terms of their in-game world relationship to each other. Whereas, if you just wanted some fight boys, there's no reason that you wouldn't want to also throw in some Ogrelons into that collection, right? Because the sort of taxonomic world connection between the monsters and the dungeon design connection between them are not the same. Whereas here, the oozes, slimes, and jellies all kind of fit together taxonomically. Like, we even told that there are connections between them, which we'll talk about in a second. But also, I would say they all fill pretty similar roles within a dungeon. They're all kind of hazard creatures. They're there to remind you that the dungeon is a dangerous place, an inimical place. It hasn't been, like, invaded by the monsters. It and the monsters are of a piece, and they are hostile to you. You cannot be safe here. This edition of D&D was much given to saying that it was about the struggle of good versus evil, but I think it's hard to see the oozes, slimes, and jellies as participating in a struggle of good versus evil. These are more kind of protagonist versus environment adventure story dangers, right? Well, most but not all, actually. There is an exception to this, which is the slithering tracker. Now, the slithering tracker in the Monster Manual is a pretty brief entry, as most monster entries in the Monster Manual are. That book was concerned with packing a lot of monsters into a single, relatively slim volume. I haven't counted, but, or maybe I have counted, but if I have counted, I've forgotten. It wouldn't surprise me to find out that there are fewer monsters in Monsters Manual than there are in Monster Manual, despite the fact that Monsters Manual is much larger. And one of the downsides of this for Monsters Manual, we can see if we look at the Slithering Tracker entry, because it has kind of a bunch of unnecessary verbiage. The weirdest thing about this entry, to me, is the fact that it spends so much time talking about what the Slithering Tracker isn't. So it says, for instance, that you would think that Slithering Trackers, being the only slimes that are really intelligent, would use their superior brains to organize the other slimes and lead them. But they can't do that. Yeah, no kidding they can't do that. What? Like, if a slime mold gained intelligence, right? If slime molds evolved to be intelligent, but there was just one of them that, you know, was able to think, even if it were able to communicate, how would it corral the rest of the slime molds into an army? They're slime molds. Slithering trackers may be intelligent, but gelatinous cubes aren't. So, but then that's the answer it gives. So it asks this question that nobody was asking, and then responds to it with the answer that was obvious to everybody to begin with. I wonder if this is one of those letters, page of Dragon magazine things. Anyway, it does then go on to suggest some fun stuff about the Slithering Tracker, like saying that they may be made by dissolving a human, like that may be their origin, that's why they're intelligent, is that they're made from intelligent creatures. The Olive Slime creature is also made from an intelligent being, but never mind. But this explanation, this kind of fun and frightening idea, is buried in one of those sections in which it talks about how, like, scholars cannot agree about the origin of the blah blah blah, which again is just such wasted verbiage. Like, if you want to tell me that there are multiple theories, that's fine, but I'd like them all to be fun. There's a lot of language in here which is identical to saying nothing, and it sort of feels like the writer is afraid to contradict an authority. Like, the writer knows that they have to address these questions, but they're not really allowed to change anything too much. I don't know. There's a kind of hesitant tone throughout this book that I think does hurt it a little bit. Anyway, having said that, the mustard jelly does introduce a new detail that's not present in the original monster, right? The original mustard jelly entry says they're similar to ochre jellies and they may be a form of ochre jelly. And the one here says they are something that resulted when a wizard attempted to polymorph into an ochre jelly, which is, on the one hand, a fun creative idea, but on the other hand, it's a piece of detail for readers. It is hard to imagine the situation in which this resolved backstory element of the ochre jelly, or the mustard jelly, excuse me, could come up in play, and it's equally difficult to imagine a situation in which it would be relevant if it did. So this is just kind of like neat atmospheric writing. And like, there's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't contribute all that much to the potential session. It's like that image of the guy standing in the corner of the party, like, they don't know I used to be a human. It's a little reward for reading through all of this text, I guess, but it doesn't come up in actual play. Or it's hard to see how it could. This is another characteristic of this book. I nearly said another problem of this book. But I do think that it was not a problem for the audience at the time. I am reading this in a particular way. And to me, when I read a monster book, I want things that will inspire play. But when I was a kid, I loved remembering trivia about things. So maybe that's just what this is. It's part of a culture of, maybe the word I'm looking for is fandom, where knowing things about the game is as important to its community as playing the game. That's not how I feel, but obviously there are people who do feel that way. So to me, I would say, on the good side, we have a convenient omnibus entry for a useful monster type. On the other side, we have a lot of waffle language that to me is not really necessary. You could get everything good about these entries into much smaller spaces without losing any of the detail. I mean, you could do something as detail-packed and just be half as long anyway. As long as you took out all the bits where somebody says, nobody knows, make it up yourself. And just put, like, a little thing at the beginning that says, any area that I don't describe in this book is open for you to add your own stuff. Here are some examples of fun things you might add. Which to me would be the default assumption anyway. If a player decides to investigate the origin of Slithering Trackers, I'm not going to be like, well, it says in the book that it's unclear, so therefore it has to be unclear in game. Am I? Anyway, as much as I find this kind of writing frustrating, if you want to put some oozes, slimes, or jellies in your game, they are all here in one place, and that's very convenient. You can kind of go down the menu of different kinds of person or armor or whatever dissolving slime and choose the appropriate type. And ultimately, okay, maybe there's some things that I don't like about the presentation, but that's very useful. That's about all the oozes, slimes, and jellies that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be doing this week or this episode's delayed special, and we're going to be taking a look at half-orcs. So I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.